to the program. This begin this morning on line number one. Say good morning to the president at NAEP. That's Jerry Earle. Good morning, Jerry. You're on the air.
Good morning, Patty, to you and your listening audience.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Patty.
All right. So I know you've sent along a letter to Dr. Parfrey, of course, at the helm of NL Health Service. What's the focus?
The focus is on what we're seeing now. What we've witnessed is a concerning and worse than a deliberate move towards privatization in our healthcare system. That is, I believe, a calculated measure, not going to benefit people in Newfoundland and Labrador. And what we've seen in other provinces, certainly in the long run, going to cost Newfoundlanders and Labradors more and impact the service delivery of the public employees that's in the system at present.
So let's talk about some of the specifics of what you call privatization creep. So on one hand, we're talking about infrastructure and the P3s to build hospitals and long-term care facilities. Then we're seeing things like travel nurses, and everyone thinks that that is an issue we have to deal with directly. But
absolutely.
Outside of those two, are there other areas where you're seeing what you call privatization creep?
There are multiple areas, Patty, and some of them may be on a smaller scale. Some of them are quite alarming around technology, and some of these people wouldn't even heard of because, like I said, they have been slipped into the system or been slipped into the system. We're even hearing such things, what they call a halo system. In long-term care, for example, where we're going to have technically a robot watching long-term care residents. If they go to get out of bed, the robot will send a message to somewhere in Ontario. We understand it, and somebody in Ontario will call the nursing unit and say, Mrs. Smith has just fallen out of bed. Well, a little bit too late then, where if we had sufficient staff on units on long-term care facilities, they'd be able to better care for and provide these services. So it's reducing services and then replacing it in that case. Even again, at another couple of facilities we've been notified now, we have maintenance staff that work in most facilities that do everything from clearing sidewalks to salting and sanding. We're getting notification now that in some cases that is going to go to a private contractor. What we call a special assistance program, for example, again, this is where a program that where residents could stay at home, did not have to worry about going out and getting things they needed, such as a tent sort of thing, so they could stay at home. That is now being contracted out by Newfoundland Health Service. So when we start to see the cumulative effect, there is a clear move by Newfoundland Health Services to move towards further privatization. And like you just mentioned, the P3s is a clear one. And even now, not living up to the commitments that were made where the envelope of the building was the P3. So that's built by, technically owned and paid for by Newfoundlanders and Labradorians over a 25 to 30 year period. Now we're even hearing cases where some of the work that would normally be done by trades personnel internal to those buildings, and we've given examples, the Newfoundland Labrador Mental Health and Addiction Facility there on the Parkway, where the trades work now is actually being done by, again, the company or the entity that owns that piece of property.
Yeah. I mean, let's just dig into P3s just for a second. It's not that long ago that when there was talk of P3s for whatever, and now we've gone all the way into twinning the highway with the P3, but initially it used to be concerns about whether or not the workforce would be unionized. And then I remember when Paul Davis was the premier, and then the answer was, no, people are going to be able to unionize inside these P3 operations, whether it be hospitals or long-term care or what have you. That seemed to quell some of the concerns. And then all of a sudden, P3s became the go-to, not the exception. They became the rule, but yet not as much pushback as there was years ago. We haven't even demanded a real careful look at, you know, what the short-term relief looks like versus the long-term pain, break it down in 10, 20, 30-year stanzas. So I don't know how the conversation went so quiet, because now that genie is out of the bottle. It's a P3 world.
I would love to see our Auditor General Newfoundland Labrador take a look at just what this is going to cost Newfoundlanders and Labradorians in the long term, because I believe some have been convinced the pain today to get a facility, or like I said, even talking about our highways a while ago, and yes, in that case, we push back. That work will be maintained by NAEP. Back when you mentioned Premier Davis at the time, the then Minister of Health, I had just become President of NAEP, and our pushback at that time was significant. But that's when they made a commitment, because Back then, Premier Davis and Minister of Health Steve Kent at that time was actually going to have the long-term care facilities built private, and then the staff would be hired by the private contractor. And the comment to us was, well, you can go unionize them. We said, that's just not going to happen. We went into a round of collective bargaining, and we secured language that actually said the staffing of those facilities and the work normally done would be done by the public sector employees. But what we're finding now is Newfoundland and Health Services, to a degree, trying to find a way around that. And the first step they're taking at now is the new mental health facility, where the maintenance staff, they actually, as I understand it, have a couple of staff from the private contractor. They have provided an office to them, I understand, free of charge in a maintenance area. And a couple of people in the building actually doing work that is clearly indicated in the contract that we have between the Government of Newfoundland and Labrador, the previous health authorities, and NAEP, saying it is our work. Our message is clear at Newfoundland Health Services. We're about to go into bargaining. They can either work with us to address this, or this is going to circumvent us from getting a collective agreement and external bargaining, and we'll do what we've got to do to protect the services and the employees that provide that invaluable service, Newfoundland and Labrador, and just round of bargaining.
Now, for some of these conversations, of course, your role is quite clear insofar as protection of jobs, benefits, and the like, and to be aware of privatization creep. But some of this will happen regardless of what people think of things like artificial intelligence. And even if we just stick with the healthcare sector, we've seen how it's improved monitoring and tried to stem the number of deaths that happened that were unexpected deaths inside healthcare settings, primarily hospitals. So some of that is coming. How do you balance your message with a better system of delivery? Like, if we can reduce the number of unexpected deaths because of our AI monitoring people's vitals, how do you balance your message there? Because, look, AI is going to be a problem for jobs into the future, everyone thinks, but in places like healthcare, we really have to have a pragmatic conversation. How do you balance that?
The balance is, Patty, like, we recognize AI, like you said, it's always existed to a degree, and it's been enhanced in some areas, like in ICU and CCUs and on floors. The continuing monitoring of vital signs and that is something that we don't take an issue with. That, in some cases, probably would free up nursing staff to be do multiple functions that they can to better protect and serve the patients in their care. But what we're talking about, the piece that we're talking about here, is you're basically going to have a robot watching a senior citizen, and that person starts to get out of bed. A human set of eyes could immediately address it if they had proper resources. But by the time a message goes to Ontario, I'm not sure how many staff they'll have on monitoring this and places a call back, if the staff is too busy to grab the phone on the unit when they have a diminished staff number, that will impact patient care. So there are some areas where AI will improve. There's certain areas where it is not going to benefit, and we've seen that happen, especially in long-term care settings where we need human resources, and that is practical nurses, personal care attendants, registered nurses, and other care providers at an appropriate level. And there's a whole host of things happening that's quite concerning. Another one where we have a number of transcriptionists here, for example, in St. John's, that do all the dictation from doctor's orders. That is now going to go over to an AI program that will be outside the healthcare system. So we question then whether our medical information will be compromised. We've seen that already happen with Newfoundland Health Services. We've already seen that happen in our school system. So now we're going to turn over our medical documentation to another AI platform, again, outside Newfoundland Labrador, because apparently there's nobody in Newfoundland Labrador good enough to do these things. I know there's companies there that can. But again, going outside the province. So we're going to be having our medical information now turned over to technology for transcription services. So there's all kinds of examples that our frontline workers in healthcare have significant concerns about. And I suggest Newfoundlanders and Labradorians should have a significant concern about, because, like I said, some things have gone down that slippery slope. But I think we really have to step up and take a look at what's happening in our healthcare system. And it's not always about, I can tell you, providing better services. And we've seen instances recently with blood collection, for example. Again, significantly concerning.
Appreciate the time this morning, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Jerry Earle, the president at NAEP. Just, I don't know how I keep clarifying this. All right. So the purpose of mentioning the size of cabinet is just to provoke a conversation. You could think it's a good idea or a bad idea to go from 17 to 14. That's fair enough. Okay. So we don't get to talk to the senior bureaucrats who hold a lot of the information, a lot of the power, and a lot of the understanding historical context of one portfolio or another. So the only point is for ministers to actually understand the width and the breadth of everything inside their portfolio and to be able to speak to it in clear, concise manner to the media, to the general public, to their constituents, to the voters of the province. That's all. I mean, it's not to say that one minister all of a sudden is going to be bombarded and overwhelmed because his or her portfolio has grown, because we know that there are a ton of people working behind the minister, but we also do need ministers to be able to have a really solid, comprehensive understanding of what it is they're responsible for. That's the only point. Because I know, look, the workforce working for the public sector, as we talk about a lot, maybe not even enough, is there's plenty of horsepower behind the minister, but ultimately the minister is going to have to be able to defend his or her department's decisions and policies. But if they don't understand it because they're absolutely flooded with information from a variety of their hefty workload, that's just a potential political problem. It's not necessarily an operational problem. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, plenty of show left for you.
Call now, 709-27-